You build the world. The roads, schools and hospitals. That's your work. And we're with you on this journey. Procore, your trusted construction partner. Discover our construction management platform at procore.com.
It's Thursday, the 31st of October, 2024, and this is Reconstruction with David Taylor and Phil Bishop from the Construction Index, with you again to discuss the latest news from the UK construction industry. And if you're wondering why we're podcasting on a Thursday rather than our usual Wednesday slot, it's because our main topic of conversation didn't actually happen until yesterday afternoon. By now, you will have realised that what I'm talking about is the budget, Chancellor Rachel Reeves' much anticipated budget, and what it means for the construction industry. Phil, did you listen to the entire speech or did you just pick out the interesting bits?
I dipped in 10 minutes late and listened to it and followed it. To be honest, it's always the case of what they say in the House is showbiz and pantomime. And what you need to wait for is afterwards to get the documents and go through the documents to see what's really going on. And there's so much to go through that I'm sure that most commentators and journalists have yet to find the real story, which probably won't emerge for about another couple of years. But we're going to do our best. And
we are indeed. I mean, I did listen to it. I was actually in the car, so I could actually listen to the whole thing until I got home, just as Rachel Reeves was getting to the interesting bit, talking about infrastructure and stuff that really did affect the construction industry. And a lot of that I missed, actually, and had to follow up later. But as you say, It's the documentation that really contains the information. And I have to admit, I always struggle to actually get anything out of a budget speech. There's so much there. I find, you know, by the end of the speech, my mind is just swimming. But luckily today, I'm glad to tell our listeners that we have a guest joining us on the podcast who I'm sure will be able to help us make some sense of the budget. He should be able to anyway. He's helped us out before. It's Dr. David Crosthwaite, Chief Economist with the Building Cost Information Service, the BCIS, and far more qualified to comment on the budget than either of us, Phil. Well, welcome, David. It's good to have you back with us.
Pleasure. Good to be here.
I hope you understood more than I did yesterday.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, touching on the point you raised, the actual speech is a bit fluffy, and you do have to wait for the red book to be available after the speech. So obviously, most economists last night and first thing this morning have been poring over the contents of the red book to see what it says. Mm. And my takeaway, not to detract from the budget at all, is that there's not a great deal in it for construction.
I think that was your summary.
That could be a very short podcast.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing which has got any sort of positive reaction from the construction industry in terms of responses we've received is another £500 million of funding for affordable homes program, which takes it up to 3.1 billion instead of 2.6 billion. But as someone wrote and said, okay, that's only going to build another 5,000 more units, which isn't much of the 1.5 million they're talking about.
Absolutely.
And what the absolute, and I'm sure David's going to come on to this, the absolute, I don't want to say killer, I don't want to overspin it, but the most important thing is the increase in employers' national insurance contribution. Mm. I mean, talk through that, David. That's got to be the thing that's going to hurt, isn't it?
Completely agree. I mean, one of the things that's really confused me over the last 24 hours is the commentator's surprise at the outcome of the budget. To me, it seems like a typical Labour budget. You know, tax and borrow to fund spending in public services. And a lot of this was pre-announced, so it shouldn't really have been a massive surprise. But I guess it's probably just, it's been so long since we've had a Labour budget that people didn't really know what to expect. Mm.
But they spent the whole election campaign saying, no, we're not like the old lot. We're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. And the Tories going, yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. No, we're not. Oh, yeah, you
they're
did.
Politicians, they always do, you know, what you don't expect. I mean, the Chancellor announced 100 billion in capital spending over the next 5 years yesterday with a mantra of invest, invest, invest. Mm. But ultimately, this is not a budget for growth. There are conflicting announcements, and as it stands, the investment in the budget is unlikely to make a material difference to the construction sector. Hmm. And it certainly isn't going to get Britain building again, which is a stated aim of the government's.
Yeah.
I mean, my major concern, and you picked up on this previously, is that they focused all that investment. So the most of the 100 billion in capital spending has been focused on public services above everything else. I mean, there's a little bit in it for construction, you know, a few billion here and there. But the issue for me is that public services don't grow the economy. And conversely, increasing the tax burden on businesses is going to stifle growth.
Mm.
So for me, I'm not actually sure, having looked at the Red Book and the announcements yesterday, I'm not clear where any growth is going to come from, to be honest. And I think the OBR assessment of the budget sort of agreed with that. There's a little bit of front loading in the figures. So GDP growth next year and the following year are slightly elevated on what was.
Were they about 1.7 or something? Aren't they?
Yeah,
1.7%.
I mean, very, very small, I mean, small elevation, feeble. Given that, you know, there's supposed to be massive, massive investment going on. But later in the forecast period, the GDP growth figures are actually worse than they were in March.
Hmm.
And this is a result of businesses starting to rein in investment because their costs are going up through the increase in national insurance for employers. So to me, it seems like a typical Labour budget. Not good for business, but good for public services. That's my takeaway.
Business about raising the employers' national insurance threshold, or lowering the threshold and increasing their contribution. Was that just a bit of sleight of hand? Because, I mean, they've talked a lot about, you know, we're not going to tax working people, and there's been much discussion about what they actually mean by working people. But, I mean, by making the employers pay more national insurance and not the employees, is that just a smokescreen? I mean, it's going to infect the employees ultimately, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what they did really was paint themselves into a corner by saying they weren't going to touch employees.
Yeah.
So, you know, which would have been the sensible approach, in my opinion, maybe reverse the national insurance cut that the Tories made in the spring. But having said that, in their manifesto, that was completely ring-fenced. So they haven't touched employees. Obviously, what they've done is they've increased the proportion of national insurance contributions to be paid. But also, as you rightly say, they've virtually halved the threshold of when that national insurance contribution is due to be paid to Treasury. And that's going to drag a whole lot more people within that bracket. And the knock-on effect will be that pay rise growth will slow, hiring decisions will probably be put off, and it's going to have a material effect on the economy, on the wider economy as a whole. So, to me, it's a massive concern, and it's a big test. It really is a big test. I mean, if you look at the gilt markets this morning, which is obviously a reflection of government borrowing costs, they were a bit up and down yesterday when the announcement was being made, but this morning they've started to peak. And obviously that's one of the things that derailed the trust budget in 2022. So I would imagine Rachel Reeves is monitoring the gilt yields at the moment, probably on a 10-minute basis.
But at least what she got right and Kwarteng got wrong was that we've been told drip, 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 this is going to be bad news coming, you know, bad news coming. And so there wasn't the big market shock. If Kwarteng had done that, he might have got away with it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of difference between the budgets. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the next day or so in terms of gilt.
I mean, in the old days, budgets used to be secret. I don't think there's ever going to be a secret budget ever again, is there? They're all going to be stage managed.
I mean, they did get ticked off at the very start, the Deputy Speaker of the House, and also the Speaker, I think, the previous day was very critical of Reeves and the Labour Party for having leaked policies prior to them being announced in the House of Commons. Yeah. So,
Right, interesting.
And then he gets slap wrists.
Going back to this question of the
no effect.
Yeah. Going back to this question of the national insurance contributions, I'm assuming, well, basically, it does increase the cost of employment, doesn't it? The cost to the employer of bringing someone on. So I wondered, and this I think is particularly relevant to the construction industry, if that's likely to lead to an increase in bogus self-employment amongst the workforce. Because, of course, you know, if somebody is, you know, a freelancer, in inverted commas, then they will be self-employed, ostensibly, and therefore will be cheaper to employ. Do you think that's likely to happen?
Quite possibly, yeah. And you know, the other issue for our sector is that it's full of small businesses.
Yeah.
Some of them, you know, one-man businesses. And, if they want to grow and have to, want to employ a labourer or whatever, they're going to have to stop paying the increased NIC contribution. Mm. So, yeah, I mean that could drive what we used to call the black economy. Yeah, in terms of people trying to avoid falling into that trap and becoming a treasury payer.
yeah, exactly. But they have increased the employment allowance, haven't they? So for the smallest employers. I think it compensates.
It's mainly
the big employers who will be paying this extra national insurance contribution, won't it?
Yeah, and that was one of the Labour Party's tenets, wasn't it? That those with the broadest shoulders would carry the burden.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out. And I don't think it doesn't actually come into effect until next April. I think that's my understanding. Mm.
This point about self-employment increasing to avoid companies having to take on national insurance contributions. The Treasury did say again yesterday they're going to clamp down on what they call bogus self-employment. But we've heard every Chancellor say this every year for the past, forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's just a ritual mantra that they all come out with and nothing ever changes. My question, David, is with regard to what you do, building cost information service, forecasting what's going to happen to tender prices and so on, if businesses have this, construction companies have these extra costs or this extra cost of their national insurance contributions, that is presumably going to come out in the tender prices that they put
Absolutely.
In. And that's going to be inflationary. And Absolutely. So the extra money that we've got for infrastructure projects or for capital spending or whatever is not going to buy any more roads or sewers or whatever. It's just going to pay for the extra the inflation of
extra
prices,
cost of
surely.
Employment, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, the cost of employment will be passed on. Yeah, I mean, it's going to impact employees, I think because wage rises will probably slow. But also, as you rightly say, it's going to impact consumers because the cost to a business of doing business will be passed on.
Hmm.
Rachel Reeves seemed to think that businesses would take a profit here to cover the cost. But, there is no way that businesses will be doing that. They will be passing on the cost to the
doesn't
customers.
Seem to be reflected in the inflation forecast. The forecast suggests that inflation is under control and all's going to be fine now.
Well, the OBR did point out that the measures in the budget will be inflationary, and they expect inflation to remain relatively high for longer. And they also expect the base rate to remain relatively high for longer.
What do they mean? Do you know what they mean by relatively high?
I was predicting that there was going to be a 25 basis point interest rate cut coming up in early November as a result of where the economy was and wider inflation having cooled significantly. But I think as a result of this budget, I'm starting to hedge my bets a bit and thinking maybe interest rates will stay on hold in November.
What do you think the chances are? I mean, the government has been going on, before the election. They were talking about building 1.5 million new homes over the course of this parliament. where does that promise stand now, do you think, in relation to what Rachel Reeves said yesterday?
Oh, don't get me started. This is one of my big problems. another absolutely mad announcement to put in your manifesto. a virtually impossible task to deliver 1.5 million homes over the life of the parliament, essentially 5 years. So you're talking 300,000 new homes a year, close to 1,000 a day, if you're looking at a working year. Mm-hmm. No government since 1970 has got anywhere near that number. The average is somewhere around 200,000 a year. And
they only did it then by chucking up Ronan Point-type tower blocks, didn't they?
Well, the only time they ever got near 300 to 350,000 was when local authorities used to deliver council housing, and they used to deliver about 150,000 a year. And if you add that to the 200,000 that commercial property developers provide, that gets you somewhere close. So you've got to find an additional 150,000 homes to be delivered, and I'm not sure where they're going to come from.
Well, what about this affordable homes thing? I mean,
you know, who's going to build them? That's the question. Who's going to? I mean, the thing is, you know, the government have no, they can't control supply because they don't have a means of delivering anything. No. So they can't actually impact supply, and it's not within commercial property developers' best interest to be flooding the market with new properties. They're keen to maintain the price, elevate the price that they can charge for what they produce. They're not going to start wanting that to diminish and affect their shareholder returns. So
you think
absolutely, it's an impossible task.
Yeah, and do you think it was impossible when they announced it even before the budget? It was never going to fly.
Absolutely not. I mean, to anyone who knows anything about how the commercial property market works, it was a non-starter.
So it's not going to be it won't be the local authorities and the housing associations delivering these.
Yeah, they took a slightly different tack to previous governments, and they didn't set themselves a yearly target. They basically set themselves a 1.5 million target over the life of the parliament.
Right.
And I suspect that was because they probably knew that they couldn't hit any yearly target. So if they pushed it back to sort of the end of their term, then people might have forgotten about it.
that's very cynical, but you're probably right.
I'm old enough and seen enough of this to be a bit.
But the most important thing in politics is to get elected. And the first thing to do is get elected, and you say whatever you have to say to get elected, and then you do whatever you can do.
Completely agree. And the silver lining to all of this announced yesterday is that being the first budget is probably going to be the harshest over the life of the parliament. So most of the pain is probably going to be, and was announced yesterday, I suspect the pain will lessen over the next few years as we get closer to an election.
Yeah.
So that is one silver lining that we can take from this.
Why are you so confident of that? If the national insurance contributions are going to be inflationary, and it's going to be harder for businesses, and we might see more construction companies collapse, might not the economy actually get worse? It might not need an even more drastic budget next year.
Blimey, I thought I was a pessimist. I'm giving the government the benefit of the doubt. I think the OBI have taken a fairly realistic view of what the impacts might be, slightly on the pessimistic side, I would suggest. So there probably is room for a bit of optimism. But yeah, I mean, I take your point. There is a possibility. And this is, for me, a massive experiment. And I don't think anyone really knows what the impact of £40 billion tax increase is going to be over the next year or so. It is a gamble. And I think that's one of the reasons why economists have been looking at how the market's reacted, how gilts are behaving, just to get a handle on, you know, wider concerns. But you're right to flag it. There are definitely concerns.
What would you have done?
I wouldn't have funneled everything into public services. I'm a great believer in investing in fixed capital, which is essentially investing in construction. So I would have not only approved the tunnelling for the HS2 link between Old Oak Common and Euston, but I would also have approved the funding for the station. It seems perverse to me that we're going to have a tunnel linking Old Oak Common with Euston, but no facility in Euston for the tunnel.
Yeah, that's going to be there. They're just trying to get someone else to pay for it.
Well, I mean, I'm assuming they're going to go down the private sector, private finance route. So they're going to be looking for a developer or a consortium to fund it. And I suspect they're thinking the same with the Lower Thames Crossing project. That was another thing that was absent from any announcement yesterday. A £9 billion project, I would have expected to be flagged up in the budget. And there was nothing on it. The announcement's been postponed until the spending review in March. And I guess they'll probably announce that they're looking for a consortium. They'll operate it on a toll basis.
Well, they've already said it's going to be tolled. We know it's going to be tolled because the Dartford Tunnel's tolled and, you know, it's got to compete with that. Yeah, but yeah, like I'm amazed. We know that they're going to revive PFI. They've basically been laying the groundwork for that.
Yeah.
And I was convinced that she had to say something on that, as you say, with regard to Lower Thames Crossing, Euston Station and Sizewell and all there's massive private massive infrastructure projects which we need. They're happening, they're planned, but we don't have the money for them. And that's what they've got to be answering. And why she didn't answer those questions yesterday beats me.
I completely agree. I mean, they're borrowing an absolute fortune. They're borrowing £30 billion, plus the revenue they're generating from the increased taxes. I mean, talking about £70 billion, most of that has been ploughed into public services, so the NHS, schools, probably some prisons, but not a lot into construction. And construction is, through the multiplier effect, a massive driver of economic growth. And this is one of the reasons why I don't think the budget yesterday was a budget for growth, because there is nothing in it to indicate that there's growth is going to come from their policies. I mean, like we said at the start, there was some tinkering with affordable housing, some money for hospitals, for the NHS estate, but nothing major in terms of transport infrastructure, for instance.
Well, they cancelled five road projects, another five on top of the other ones they've already cancelled, and said, we're going to give some more money for filling in potholes. Nice to have some more potholes filled in, but it's not the same as major infrastructure projects, I don't think filling in potholes does a great deal for the economy, does it?
No, absolutely. I mean, the thing about infrastructure is, through the multiplier, it basically drives all other economic growth. So, I mean, you know, we shouldn't forget that we've still got HS2, and HS2 is
still
being built. Some of it. Yeah. And you know, people are criticising and have been over the last decade, left, right and centre. But it's a bit, I think we touched on this last time, it's a bit like Crossrail. These things inevitably go over budget, they take longer than expected. But once they're completed,
how do we do without it?
Absolutely. You wonder how you ever managed before. And this is how the Victorians built infrastructure. And it's not about the cost. It's basically about the benefits at the end of it. But I'm hoping that the Labour Party is setting up this thing called NISTA, the National Infrastructure Strategy Advisory thing. And I'm hoping that they take that sort of view, that it's a more about benefits case than cost to deliver. And if they do that, then hopefully, and I'm assuming that their investment meeting a couple of weeks ago would have been about driving, you know, the case for doing this sort of stuff. At least I'm hoping that happens.
Well, that was just a meeting of bankers, though, wasn't it? They didn't even have John Armit there. Yeah. I mean, there was no one who knows anything about infrastructure there. It was just bankers.
Yeah, but they are the people that fund these things.
Yeah.
So we do need them on side. Yeah, I mean, the other thing that really concerned me before the budget was, so the Red Book really had very little to do with construction. But prior to that was the release of the industrial strategy document. And I'm not sure if you've seen that.
Yeah.
But that also didn't mention construction at all, really. All it did was focus on the potential growth driving sectors. And I was amazed that construction wasn't in that. So I do think this government probably aren't going to be leveraging construction to drive wider growth. No. They're going to be focusing on other sectors.
Do you think the government, being a fairly traditional Labour government, regards construction, much of the way it regards farmers, as people who always complain, but actually they're loaded and they're, you know, they're big business property developer types and they don't deserve any sympathy or special treatment?
Yeah. I do think there's something in there. But you know, you've only got to look at the recent insolvencies to realise that's not the case. And this is another reason for me being concerned about the uptick in employers' national insurance, is that, you know, businesses are already struggling to survive, and you know, you're bolting on an additional cost for businesses to operate. I'm not sure how many more will be falling by the wayside as a result. I mean, the failure of ISG not that long ago has really impacted government projects, because they were obviously delivering 4 new prisons for them. So, you'd hope they'd realise that construction isn't afloat and awash with money.
And when from what I've read in the budget document, when Rachel Reeves does talk about infrastructure, it tends to be pretty rail heavy. I mean, she's talking about the East West Rail project, which is already underway. I mean, she hasn't announced a new project there, and the Transpennine Railway up in the north. I can't remember exactly where it goes.
Also underway. Another announcement.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And then she talks about gigafactories making batteries. That's not infrastructure. And ports. There's talk about some ports. I mean, I suppose ports are infrastructure, but no roads. Ports, yeah. I mean, really no roads. So I was quite surprised by that. And she, of course, she wants to encourage more electric cars. Maybe she realizes that there might be fewer cars on the roads, and that's why she's not going to build any. But it did seem strange to me that her sort of concept of infrastructure, what didn't really sort of tally with what most construction people would consider infrastructure.
No, I completely agree. Yeah. Although I did notice in one of the construction publications this morning that the CEO of Balfour Beatty said that he welcomed the infrastructure investment in the budget. So I'm not sure what document he was reading. maybe one that I haven't seen. But their view of infrastructure is completely different to ours, I think.
Yeah.
It's not really heavy construction related, so it's not civil engineering driven.
Roads,
it's
bridges, and tunnels—that's what I always think.
It's not that sort of stuff. It's
and railways, I suppose.
Yeah, upgrades to the national grid. I mean, that's not to say that isn't infrastructure, but you know, it's not the heavy civils that we think of, and also wind farms and
yeah. Which weren't really mentioned, actually. Wind farms weren't mentioned that much. Although it is the government policy to they've lifted the ban on land-based wind farms, but I haven't seen any announcements that they're going to fund any of them themselves or even promote them in any way. So don't understand that really.
No, I'm just looking at the. What else they committed to? I should have actually tallied it up before we started.
While looking at that, David, I'll say that what I was disappointed about is that there were no real levers pulled. It was quite crude. We're going to take your money and we're going to, you know, try and cut down waiting lists in hospitals. It's essentially the one line summary of the whole budget.
Yeah,
and there are ways in which you can actually change things and encourage investment. And we've talked before about the, it used to be called the super deduction, full expensing of buying plant and equipment, which was introduced by Rishi Sunak when he was Chancellor on a temporary measure. Jeremy Hunt then made it permanent. And there's been lobbying from the hire companies saying, leasing companies excluded from this tax benefit? Particularly in the construction industry, most of the equipment is operated on a hire or lease basis.
Yeah.
It would help the construction industry clean up its act, invest in nice new electric or low emission machines if we had this tax break too. And the Treasury said, yeah, that's a good point. We'll think about it. We'll think about it and get back to you. Rachel Reeves on the Red Book says the same thing again. They've listened to the arguments and they're still thinking about it, which basically means they're not going to
happen.
But they don't say so. They don't. Yeah. If they've been thinking about it for this long and they haven't decided to come down in favour of it, they've no intention of that. And that would have been an easy win, and would have had an awful lot of construction industry going, yay, great, now we can spend some money and buy the new machines, save money on new machines or whatever. That's one at that end of the more sort of civil engineering end of the industry, but also at the RMI end. I had a plumber in the other day, and I've mentioned this over and over again, and this is a bee in the bonnet to the Federation of Master Builders. Why I should have to pay, as a homeowner, have to pay VAT on having a plumber, put in a new radiator or clean out my system. It seems to be stupid because I go to plumber and say, what's the price? I say, oh, yeah, but plus that on top of that. Go, oh, God, that's another, so I'm scurrying around, ringing people up, saying, I'm looking for a plumber who's not that registered, but is also competent. And this is why people use,
But most plumbers will be that registered because they obviously earn a lot of money.
Well, so. Yeah. You want one who's sort of semi-retired then or something. But
yeah.
It's stupid. It incentivizes people to use cash in hand.
Yeah, cash in hand, absolutely. Yeah.
And whatever. Yeah. Now, if I'd gone to a legitimate plumber who wasn't that registered, I dare say he or she would have declared that money. But to go to someone who is that registered and paying cash in hand, they can't declare it because they're not paying VAT on it. Well, so, no. I mean, you could tidy up the system, you could improve the industry, you could allow small building companies to compete financially on an even keel with the... And I'm not saying anyone who's not that registered as a cowboy. That would be completely unfair. But most cowboys are not that registered.
Point.
It would be so simple and it would do so much good just to say domestic repairs are, not subject to that.
Yeah. But that's been the case for years. Well,
maybe they'll have to do that to stimulate the economy when they realise that their plan A is not going to work in terms of growth. So.
Well, we'll see. I don't think that might stimulate. I think it would stimulate growth actually to an extent, but not to the extent it needs.
Yeah,
to.
I mean, the economy, in my view, definitely needs some stimulus, more so than we got yesterday.
Because anyone's actually paying VAT on having a cap.
It's bumping around 1 to 1.5% per annum growth is not really good enough, I don't think.
But even at peak, it's only going up to 1.8 or something.
1.7, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been fairly pessimistic on the call, but maybe all is not lost. There has been some pushback, and I know I was a bit worried that this might happen prior to the budget. I think a lot of stuff is going to be pushed back to the spending review in the spring.
Mm.
And I'm hoping then we get a bit more clarity on how the government's proposing to deliver their 1.5 million new homes, what's going to happen with Lower Thames Crossing. So hopefully by then they'd have had a little bit more time. Obviously, they've only been in government 4 months.
Yeah. I think the Lower Thames Crossing is we might have a new transport secretary by then who'll have to send everything back to the beginning of the journey.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. And, there's an existing project pipeline for major projects that the Tories announced. And it would be good to get some clarity from the current government in terms of whether they're going to honour that or whether there's a new pipeline that they're putting together. To give the industry early warning of what's coming up. So I think all those questions need to be addressed.
Yeah, good point.
Right, yeah. I think we've covered that.
I think we have.
one thing occurs to me, though, we haven't mentioned the capital gains tax. And I think that's going to, I predict, and I was talking to someone just a couple of weeks ago, actually, planning to sell their business in our industry, sell their business to an employee ownership trust next year. Obviously, it's Vince Cable, basically, who's the architect of employee ownership trust, being promoting them. And I can't remember what the legislation was called, about 2012, whereby if you sell your business to your employees, you don't pay capital gains tax on that. And as capital gains tax is going up, that'll become even more incentivized. We normally talk about more than one topic on this on our podcast. And the one thing we haven't talked about, well, we talked about it a couple of months ago, David, actually, about the amount of merger and acquisition activity.
Yes, that's true.
And I was just totting up in the past 2 months on our new service alone, and I don't pretend that we're comprehensive, we only report what we hear about, 21 acquisitions we've reported on just in the past 2 months, which is quite a lot. I mean, it's not talking about companies that have gone under, and maybe, you know, there might have been perfectly, well, a lot of these were profitable, good companies, but for whatever reason, you know, choosing to sell up.
It's normally about financial peril.
Yeah, well.
So I suspect what's driving it is that owners are
feeling wobbly,
yeah, feeling under pressure. And I'm assuming that a lot of these acquirers are foreign.
That's a very good point, actually. Yeah.
Looking to pick up fairly cheap domestic businesses. And the same thing happened after the financial crash. I mean, I used to work for a business called Davis Langdon, which was a UK partnership owned cost consultant.
They're now Acom, are they now?
They are. Yeah. They were acquired in 2010 by Acom, who frankly didn't know what they were buying, but just thought that it was you know, a fairly well priced English business that would break them into the UK and also Europe and some of the Middle East. So I suspect that's what's driving it. Dodgy financials of the businesses that are being picked up. I mean, you know, you only got to look at ISG to see that there was a potential suitor there. But once they'd done their due diligence on ISG, they realised that their financial position was a lot worse than they were actually owning up to. And they obviously pulled out. Well, they didn't. They offered a ridiculously low amount to buy the business, and the business said no. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of it going on. You've only got to look at the last few years to realise that most, and this is another concern, is that most businesses are going to be struggling to survive, let alone thrive. Now you're adding to that burden in terms of putting up the cost of them doing business. It's not a recipe for economic growth.
Right, so builders, not blockers. That was the slogan, wasn't it? makes you wonder really what they were thinking.
Well, she started off by saying we're going to rebuild Britain, and you've got to put a massive question mark at the end at the end of that. I just where's the evidence Britain's going to get rebuilt?
Up the workers.
Yeah. But I mean, it's given us something good to talk about, that's for sure.
That's a silver lining, I suppose.
The last budget was a little bit underwhelming. This one's underwhelming for a different reason, but there's plenty to talk about.
Pretty downbeat. But so we're all going to be holding our breath until the spending review in the spring. Is that going to tell us a lot more? Or is it simply going to be just tweaking things?
They're saying that they're going to have a new pipeline. They're going to announce their 10-year strategy for infrastructure. And I guess a lot of it will depend on what their definition of infrastructure is, as we've already touched on. But that's the thing that I'm holding on to in terms of having some clarity for the sector, because at the moment there isn't a lot out there.
The other thing we haven't mentioned, which I don't entirely understand, David, and I hope you can explain it to me, the new rules for saying that spending on infrastructure doesn't add to national debt or something like that. Are you on top of this?
it's it's about capital spending. So it's not necessarily to do with infrastructure. It's a way of them being able to borrow more. So instead of using the money that they're borrowing for the day-to-day running of government and government departments, they're siphoning it off and they're putting these things called guardrails next to the money that they're borrowing to stop it being siphoned off into the day-to-day running of government and keep it for
capital spend,
other projects.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so,
right, okay.
So capital, but not fixed capital, other capital, a wider definition of capital. My view is that it should all go into fixed capital, which would stimulate construction. So, essentially that's what it is. It's a siphoning off of a ring fencing of the money that they're borrowing, which lenders would be concerned would be, you know, filtered into the day-to-day running of government.
What does that achieve?
That shouldn't happen.
Apart from reassuring lenders, what does that achieve?
It gives them more transparency, which is obviously what the lenders want. So they can see that the stuff's being spent on X, Y, and Z and not just spent
just
on...
Just frittered away, yeah. Yeah.
But in terms of... listeners, taxpayers, construction industry, construction workers, it's not a thing. It's nothing.
The whole budget's not a thing for the people you've just mentioned. So.
That's a very concise summary, I think. Oh, well.
I mean, the other issue for me is about value for money, and you just touched on that. You know, and looking at HS2, you have to question whether or not there's value for money for the taxpayer there.
Hmm.
But the government has said they're going to introduce a value for money specialist, I think. So,
how much will they be paid?
Yeah, exactly. That'll be cheap.
An absolute fortune, I would imagine. Yeah,
but they're not allowed to be a consultant, so they'll have to be a civil servant.
Of course not. No, can't employ consultants anymore. But yeah, so that's supposedly going to be announced in the spending review. So these initiatives will hopefully will come to fruition in March next year.
Which is
we'll get a bit more clarity.
but that's all the other way around. In the olden days, the autumn statement was how we're going to spend the money, and the spring budget was what taxes we're going to, you know, beer and fags and petrol and whatever.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has reversed, gone full circle.
Oh, well.
Right. Okay. I think we've got a very, very clear picture from David as to where we stand on the budget. And as David says, we'll reconvene in the spring and see if we're feeling any more optimistic. But my remedy to the listeners is your beer should now be one penny a pint cheaper unless your pub landlord has kept it.
Yeah, quite.
But it shouldn't be more expensive. So go have a pint.
Yeah.
And don't get too depressed.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm desperately hoping for something that can drive a bit of optimism. So.
So are we.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. See you in the spring.
Thank you very much, everyone. Okay. Goodbye.
Have a good day.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing.